Hi, welcome back to SaaS Radio Hour. I'm Matt, your host, and today I'm joined by Ben Tossel from MakerPad. Ben, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's been awesome seeing MakerPad grow over the past few years into this community of people excited about building software really without coding. I'm curious if you could take us back a couple years, I believe, when you were first starting MakerPad. What was sort of the story behind that? What got you wanting to start a community about no-code tools?
Yeah, I don't think it was intentional. When I was working at Product Hunt, I was a victim of my surroundings, and there was just so many incredible makers making stuff, building things, launching stuff, like new products every day. I think I worked out there was like 80,000 products launching when I was there.
Wow.
So that was like over 2 years I saw that many, because it was my job to look at everything. And I was just like, I want to do this myself. I want to be able to just think of an idea and do it. But the only thing stopping me, or seemingly, was I couldn't code. I wasn't technical. I didn't want to do it for, like, learn to code for 9 months to build a really shitty version of something. I just wanted something quick and out there.
Yeah.
And then being at Product Hunt, I got to see companies like Webflow, Zapier, Card, Typeform have launches. Mm. If it was their first or one of their many launches. So I just sort of figured out that I could use some of these to build stuff and launch it. So that's what I did, and I just kept doing that over and over, and people were interested in, like, it felt like they were interested in my ideas, but no one ever bought anything from me. But I actually then started speaking to people and figuring out that it wasn't the ideas they were interested in, it was how I was putting these tools together to sort of showcase the ideas. So I thought that old saying, those who can't do, teach. I sort of took that approach and thought, okay, well, I'll show people how to do it. I'll take that route and teach people how to do this stuff.
And it just went from there.
Yeah, so I started something called, there was something first called Day.Dot, which was, if you pay me like $300, I'll build your MVP for you. That was just after Product Hunt, and no one paid me anything. It was just, again, it was the same, just tell me how to do it. Like, I don't want you to build it for me, just tell me how you did it. Then I started a company called Nuco that was basically like tutorials. I built the random ideas I'd come up with. I would record my screen, and I'd upload them so that people could pay for access, basically. And I did that for a little while. But I went off track very quickly. I started going down the traditional startup route, thinking it's got to grow 10% week on week. It's got to, like, be Y Combinator-able. It's got to be, like, all of that path. It's got to tick all of those boxes. So we started trying to build, like, a platform and an actual, like, software product and all this stuff. And then I was, I think like 4 or 5 months after starting it, I was like, I don't even know what this thing is anymore. And it's certainly not growing in the way that I was hoping it would. So I took some time off, a month or so, traveling and doing all that stuff. And I read Paul Jarvis's book, Company of One. And it just reiterated a bunch of stuff to me, which is, you can just be a solo entrepreneur, have a good business, have a good life, have a good balance of work and enjoying yourself. And, like, that's okay. It doesn't need to be a $1 billion company. You can just have a company that brings in a few hundred thousand dollars a year. So from that, I sort of took, okay, how can I do the things that I enjoyed doing and was good at doing without having to rely on anyone else, and, like, almost focus on doing less? So I almost relaunched the same thing I started with, which was a website that you can get access to these video tutorials. So that's where MakerPad started in January 2019. So 2 years this month. And that's how MakerPad was started.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's sort of what no code enables, right? You mentioned that about being able to start almost a smaller, almost more traditional company, right? Something that doesn't have to be a unicorn, but something that can actually provide something useful on a smaller level. And that's almost what the entire idea of no code stuff enables teams to do, is that you can build a business without, say, needing a designer and a developer and everything, almost as a even more abstracted way of the way a lot of modern software is built, where you're building on the stack of other stuff. You maybe don't need to have a data center management team now. You just use AWS, or you don't need the telephone system person. You just use Twilio, right? And that now no code lets you go even further with that. Maybe you can abstract out and be like yourself, build a business of one without even coding.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like just the accessibility that no code enables is huge, and it just allows like almost anyone to do almost anything with tools that are so easy to understand, so easy to play with, so easy to build stuff with. It's just a lot quicker, a lot easier to go from I've got an idea to okay, here's what it looks like, than if you had to know how to code to do that. And I think as well as that's a really, really good thing to happen, it also could be viewed in the other way, which is, okay, well, for some of these sort of big CEOs of big companies, public companies, wouldn't have gotten to where they are unless they persevered through that one idea. So if you use no code as a way to spin up a bunch of ideas, are you potentially sort of missing one of your opportunities that that could be something if you stuck with it? But I don't know, I think the opposite is probably outweighs the negative side of it in that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Because sometimes there is that thing of having to get, I guess, in the weeds. I don't know, there's a story of Amazon finally figuring out their logistics after basically having a terrible holiday season. And Bezos went and bought holding order so they could pack all the stuff and try to get it shipped out in time. And that sort of pushed them to, I guess, grow up and have a more professional team running logistics. And so sometimes it's not solid, I guess, they can push you further. But then maybe slogging through the code isn't what you need. Maybe it's just wrangling with the business idea itself.
Yeah, I think there's some... I think, sorry, the calls, you've gone really quiet. I can't hear so well.
I'm sorry, my headphones popped out.
No worries. I think, yeah, there's something in how many new things there are right now, and new things being launched, and new tools, and new other things like that. I think that people expect a level of design out of the box. So things like, if you look at the first version of Airbnb, would a version like that now be trusted and be used by people, or would they expect it to look like what Airbnb, like a more polished version of Airbnb, does now? I think we expect things on the internet and how many things there are and how many options. I think there's something about, like, it's not about the attention span. It's, you've got to get there. I can't remember what it was. I think Julian on Twitter did a really good tweet on it, but it was obviously not good enough to stick in my head. I'll have to try and find it. But it was like, you have more distractions and more other things to do, that you've got to keep someone's attention. But I think that we have our tolerance is a lot less for things that aren't built in a way that people expect nowadays.
Sure. Yeah, there's such a high bar, definitely. You look back at early iOS apps, for example, and they look so basic compared to what we would expect from just even an MVP today. The bar is constantly changing. And I guess that's one good thing with no code type tools and, even just more APIs that people are using to build more traditional software businesses, is that, say, you're now expected to have messaging built in where you can just plug in an API to do that versus building out the whole thing from scratch. And so it's almost like these tools help you hit that polished level at a much earlier stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think these tools like Webflow, Card, they also just give you that. They make it so easy to make things that look good or look good enough.
Yep. So what got you to do a community? I'm curious from sort of a building a business monetization perspective. The traditional route with content on the internet has been free content plus ads, which is pretty much a terrible business model, but it's gotten a lot of the internet to where it is today. And then you've got the more recent style of doing a Substack style newsletter where you're selling a newsletter with content, or you've got things like full-on courses where you're paying $200-$300 for videos and ebook and what have you. MakerPad's a tad different here, where you're basically selling access to a community along with these courses. What sort of pushed you into that exact, I guess, mode of monetization and community building?
Yeah, I think it was just one of the easiest things I could do. I knew community. I knew how to sort of host a Slack group because that's what I'd been doing before I got hired at Product Hunt. And whilst I was there, it was all about community building. And I just knew that, okay, I could use Slack as a way to have a community talking and chatting to each other there. I could put a paywall up using the Stripe integration into Typeform and just make that easy. I'm not sure if the Substack sort of wave was really taking off when I first started this. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that
it's a tad more recent, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know that it was that much of a conscious effort. Like, I'd love to say that, oh yeah, I thought of all these things before I decided on this business model, but I don't think I did. I just thought, I'll just put a paywall up and then just have somewhere where like-minded people can talk about this stuff and ask questions and everything else. I think that just naturally came as part of, like, if you're learning something, that sort of goes hand in hand in, like, I want to go somewhere where I can talk about what I've just learned or something else I've tried instead. And there's something in my head around courses that I never wanted to do, like, launch a course, I never liked the idea of you have this huge sales page, you're trying to, like, push people in a constrained time to sign up to a specific course to learn a specific bunch of things, only because that's not how I learn and not how I do things. I like to know, here's a platform with all the things you could possibly think of, and it's up to you to dive in and out, take it at your own pace, learn this thing, and then switch over to this thing. If I've ever done a course, I've skipped to the 2-3 videos that I am interested in and then might not ever go back to it. So I wanted to create an environment that felt like that, but it felt like you were only paying for one course. We'd always have access to new tutorials, new things that we were doing, and new education. So that's how we priced it, or how I did it in the first place. And also, we do work with companies, Zapier, Airtable, Webflow. So there is, like, an element that is kind of, we call it partnerships, but it's kind of in the ad space, I suppose. We're always constantly figuring out or sort of tossing up between, do we go and lean more into sort of that monetization model and make it less of a consumer payment product, or do we try and do something else completely? Is it monetized this way? Is it monetized that way? And that's one of the things that you end up just experimenting with over and over and over, I think. So that's also what we're looking at too.
Right. Makes sense. I liked how you described that about jumping in and out of courses and just studying the section you want. It's almost like the Netflix of content or courses then. And if anything, I think the difficult thing is often figuring out what part of the course you would actually want to learn from. I've done, for instance, a video-based photography course, and it had section titles, it had chapters more or less, but it was really difficult to figure out, okay, do I really need to watch the whole 15 hours or whatever, or can I really just jump in this one thing? And that's one thing that I think text-based courses and things that have more description and discussion could definitely help with, because that can point you in exactly where you're wanting to go versus just having to go sit through this whole thing.
Yeah, and I think there's, like, masterclass is interesting, where each thing is basically a course itself, which has a sequence. And I think there are cases to be made where, okay, you're not going to be able to build this type of community unless you have like a website and then a payment section and then a community forum. Like, there are some sequences to it, but I think you also don't know where people are coming in. So I could be coming in to MakerPad where I've already got a website up and running and I've got my payment, but I just need the automation as to onboard new members. So I just want to know that bit. So I don't need to like go through the first couple of videos to do the setup
right.
stuff, especially because there are so many different tools to do different things now. If you wanted to use a community, you could use so many different types of software, forum, Slack type tools and everything else. So the way we were trying to position MakerPad is, here are some tools that just show you how these building blocks work together. You can also use basically any other tool that you want, but this is just like structurally how to look at these building blocks and how they can go together and what sort of things are possible. We've noticed recently that tutorials, the way we do them, are slightly different now to when we used to do them maybe 12 months ago. I think we always thought that someone's going to sit down and watch the tutorial from start to finish and be like sort of have it in one corner of their screen and they're copying it exactly step by step. But whenever we've done tutorials or we speak to people who've done tutorials on our platform and others, it's a similar thing where you skip through the video, you scrub through to the bit that you need to know, you see, okay, cool, they're using Slack, but I'm going to use this other forum instead. Okay, that's a good idea. I'll do something similar to that. And it's more of a, this is an inspirational, like, one way of doing it, but I'm going to do something different because I use different tools and different things. So I think we're trying to lean into that a bit more.
Yeah.
And have quicker, shorter tutorials that are easier to flick back and forth with, but also just sort of inspire, okay, here are the building blocks and how you put them together. You can do this in this way, or the millions of other ways that you can put these tools together.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've often thought the worst thing with programming, beginner programming courses, from an actual code perspective, is they all want to run you through the same thing. You're setting up a dev environment, you're downloading an IDE, or traditionally, you're making a hello world. And by the time you've done this in C++ and Java and whatever, you're just like, okay, I got this. Like, I want to get beyond just the basics, but it's hard to know where to dive in once again. And that's oddly one of the things that, to a certain degree, kept me from doing more programming, is that I burned out on any programming course I touched because they're so repetitive. So I had found no code as almost an alternative to that before it was even a thing. I'd used Microsoft Access on a PC as a teenager, just to make random little tiny app-ish ideas I had for dumb stuff, just recreating what really would have been easier in a spreadsheet, more or less. But it made me realize you can make stuff, right, without having to code. And then there was Visual Basic, right? You do a tutorial on that. You could make basically a basic web browser that was just when the Internet Explorer reskinned, more or less, but in a few lines of code. And it made me realize, wait, it maybe doesn't have to be so complicated, right? And of course, then you have the whole no-code revolution with Zapier and Airtable and everything. I'm curious, what's the first, I guess, no-code experience you had of something? Did you have anything before you were at Product Hunt that was something that made you go, hey, wait, I could do stuff without coding?
When I first got into the working world, I was running Twitter ads and Facebook ads for a social media agency in London. And when I was there, I still had the mindset of one day I'll be an entrepreneur of some sort. I'll build something. I don't know what it is. I was part of some of these Slack groups for wannabe founders, basically. And I was looking at Product Hunt every day and things like that. I didn't realize it until you just asked me now that when I was there, I was trying to build a Twitter publishing tool, like an automated Twitter publishing tool that you could upload all of your copy, all of your images, all of your links. And that was just with a spreadsheet. And what we're trying to do at MakerPad now is, how do you reach everyone who's ever touched or worked in a spreadsheet and educate them that the next step of this could be building a tool, could be like automations, it could be like this no code thing that you may or may not have heard of. I think that's the angle to take. And when you start with spreadsheets and spreadsheets get more complicated and you have macros or you have automations, you have functions, you have all of those sorts of things, that's not far off from where we are now, where you can attach Stacker or you can attach Glide to the spreadsheet and then you have an app that actually works. So it's really interesting how those paths are very similar, but I missed it at the time.
That was
definitely one of my first things.
So it's funny, right? A lot of no-code tools, it's almost been a trend recently that more and more no-code products have more or less a way to use code in them. You have early tools, say when Google Sheets first came out, as a spreadsheet competitor to Excel. It didn't have macros, something that Excel had for years. And then over time, you get Google Apps Scripts, I believe is what it's called, and you can add some code inside your spreadsheet to do a bit more. Zapier, I believe 4 years ago now, added, maybe 5 years now, added code by Zapier where you could add JavaScript into your apps. You had, I think, Airtable more recently is added where you can have Airtable apps where you add code inside there. And it's like basically you can go a certain level with no code and then everyone more or less pushes you to go add some code in once you're at a certain level of, okay, I need more customization than this. Do you think that points to a weakness of sort of the no-code model, or that no-code will continue to cover more and more areas and that, you know, you'll just find this scripting be almost a crutch for people who are used to more traditional coding?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, there's going to be more things that you can do with no-code, and then the code will be for the more advanced things that the no-code tool, the no-code thing can't yet do. And I think that'll be the case more and more, and I think that's still like that's the thought process behind non-technical people now and developers. Some developers can see, oh wait a second, I don't have to write all those lines of code like you were saying before. When you're learning it, you have to start from the start, go through all the motions before you actually can get to the meaty bit. And developers always want to, well, ones I've spoken to want to save time. They don't want to write 1,000 lines of code that they don't need to write. So how can a tool help them skip all of that? And then they can just add the bits they really need to, the more complex things at the end. So something like Supabase, for example, setting up a database and authentication, how do you just make that easier? It was similar with Stripe. Stripe enabled payments to be integrated for companies in a lot less lines of code. And there's a tweet the other day, which is... Well, there's a Steve Jobs clip actually that's saying the best line of code is the one that you don't have to write, and it's that's the whole point of this whole thing. I think is it's not that we don't want people to code; we definitely need that. We'll need more developers who code than ever. It's just you don't always need like that's not always the first thing you need to be doing is dipping into the code. But when you build stuff with no code, you also figure out more how technology works and how technology talks to each other. So for me, going deep into Webflow, Airtable, and Zapier, I know and recognize parts of an API. I know how to do a patch request. I know how to do some of those things and can understand, like, okay, this is my database layer, this is my front end, and this is the connector that does, like, triggers if this, then that type of stuff. And that is going to help you speak to more technical people when you have to. You're going to have to at some point. And then it's also one of the best ways to like start thinking, okay, I want to learn to code now. Like I want to do more of this. I want to do a bit more advanced stuff. I understand APIs. I understand some of these things, but I actually want to go a bit deeper. So it's quite a good path to set someone up so that they know what they're trying to build or what they're trying to get to. Before they actually have to dive in and start that whole process of hello world and everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great way to sort of get the basics down first. And it's funny, at a certain level, no-code tools are almost coding, right? Like, just, I mean, if you get, I guess, at a high level, anything that's, you know, instructions for a computer to a certain degree is code, right? Wikipedia defines code as a system of rules to convert information into another form. And so to a certain degree, when you're adding filters or you're adding a loop or while statement essentially, but in a no code environment where you're just plugging this stuff in, that to a certain degree is coding. At the very minimum, you're learning the way code works, right? Even if you're not having to go write lines of code with commas and brackets.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just the abstraction. It's the way you're interacting with a computer that then produces that code, whether you are writing it line for line or whether you're just moving things around on a page. So I could go in and export my whole Webflow site, and there's going to be thousands of lines of code there. Now, it might not be the proper way to write code, or like might not be the proper layout or anything because of how I design stuff, but the code is created, and it's just the way you're interacting with that interface to then produce that code. You're always going to have the very raw way of doing it, or there's going to be more abstractions, and I think we're just going to see more and more of that happening over the years.
It's an abstraction layer. You could write assembly code, right? Literally machine language ones and zeros. You can go up a level and you have standard programming languages like C++. Then you go up a level and you have interpreted things like JavaScript. And it's almost like you're just up one more level up that stack, where you're still giving instructions, but it's being interpreted through this whole layer of stuff. And you don't have to think about, like in programming, where your memory is, what the memory is doing or whatever. You just go and, you know, you get your stuff done basically without thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's frameworks in writing code that enable developers to write less code and do more things and just have all of the smaller intricate things taken care of too. So there's always this push for how do you do more with less, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. And I think no code is one of those things, but it's come so far from, like, say the left side, where the right side is completely like we've got to write full code. The left side has come up as, okay, you don't have to write any code. I think I suppose low code could be in the middle of this scale. And it's just it's all a scale of software development. It's just where your skill lies and where you prefer to work. Like, I had a conversation with Sahil from Gumroad, who's an investor in MakerPad, where we were chatting to Cortland on Indie Hackers Podcast, and it was, okay, so if we had to start a new project this weekend, how would we do it? And Sahil said, well, I'll start writing code. And I said, yeah, well, I would start, like, setting up my Zapier account or whatever it was. And it was quite cool. You stick to what you know, and if you're good at it and if you know how to do it, then that's fine. It's not... They're not two sides of a coin. It's two ends of a scale, I think, or two ends of a spectrum that ultimately we're all trying to create software. That's the point of either of these things. It's just a different path to get there.
When all you have is a hammer, everything's a nail. But at least with no code, your hammer's rather versatile.
Exactly. It can be a round hammer or a square hammer quite easily.
I feel like, almost on an education level, and of course, not just people studying no code today in business, but almost if you go back to elementary and high school education, there's this idea that everyone needs to learn how to code. And on a broad level, I almost agree with that from the perspective of, even as a non-developer, I feel like learning some basic amounts of code helped me see things in a more logical, step-based manner, almost like understanding how a factory works, where you break stuff down into pieces and, you know, this, then that. And that ideology applies, obviously, into building no-code stuff. And if you don't come at it with that sort of programmer mentality, you won't be able to use no-code tools as effectively. But I do wonder if there is not a better way to almost imagine using something like Zapier to teach programming-style concepts to children in school, to let people make something more directly rather than just, you know, making Hello World forever and ever.
Yeah, I think, tools like Glide, for example, you could make a directory of your classmates, and you just have to put stuff into a spreadsheet. You connect the Glide account, and then all of a sudden you've got like an app that you can actually have and look at on your phone. You can look at it on the computer, and I just think being able to, or having that sort of experience for someone in the school system, is going to be way bigger than the impact of I just got the computer to show Hello World. I think when you're when you're using a computer, or we have phones that can do so much stuff now, by the time a child is in middle school, they've used iPads, they've used phones, they've typed stuff, they can type Hello World on a phone quite easily. I don't know that it's going to have the same effect on someone to say, you've created some software that has shown you a couple of words. I think it's going to be more visual than that, or need to be more visual than that, where if you can have a young child who then has created an app in less than 5 minutes and hasn't really done a lot to the inputs of it, I think that's going to be a huge improvement in the interest for building stuff with software. And then you, like I said, it's, you start doing that, as soon as you go down that rabbit hole of no code, you quickly touch code or see code, and it's then up to the person whether they dive into it, they touch it and actually move it around and change it, or they sort of stay away from it completely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So on the MakerPad, I'm curious, how much of your business is run with no code, or could you run what you're doing today without ever touching code? Or do you still end up jumping into the CSS of your site a bit and adding some code steps in Zaps or in Bubble or whatever tools you're using? Do you think you could do it without any code, or have you over time increasingly leaned on code too?
So we basically don't use much code at all. And up until recently, we didn't use any code. It does depend on, this is why we don't want it to be two sides of a coin, or two different camps where someone's saying, well, you've got a code snippet in there that you've copied and pasted somewhere. You're not a no-code purist and all this sort of stuff. So it depends on what sort of level you're at. But I've never written code or learned to write code for MakerPad. There have been code snippets that I've copied from one place or another to integrate our membership system, or have a button open another web page or something after the fact. Things like that have happened. But recently we did have a developer come and sort of hook up Firebase to our users and do some things there that we were experimenting with like profiles and what they can do with the profile and posting, like submitting things. Just because Webflow has ways you can do it with no code, but it's a bit, you have to rely on a lot of connections happening seamlessly, and then there's a lot of things that build up in your Webflow backend, and then it gets slow and all of that stuff. So we tested out using Firebase and that route, but it's not then something that we now are relying on and not necessarily leaning into much either. So it's probably just one of those experiments that we looked at, but I don't know if that's really going to be the future of our platform really.
Yeah. How many software businesses? So obviously at a certain level, almost everything is a tech business nowadays if you touch the internet at all in your work. But how many businesses do you think run what people would look at and think of as an app or a software that are built with no code, that are just actually a full business that did like you did, they're running a whole thing that seems like it's unique software, but it's powered by no-code tools?
So I'm not sure what you mean exactly with that. Can you elaborate a bit?
Yeah, do you know of any apps in the App Store, essentially, that were powered by something like Glide, right? Do you know of any software businesses that have, more or less, that people would look at and think, this is an app, this is software, but that are powered by a no-code stack?
So there would be productized services are something where that's easily built on a no-code stack. one example I always give is Lambda School, which is a coding bootcamp, which was initially basically built in the first place with Airtable and Zapier and Typeform and a bunch of other no-code tools, even though they were teaching
programming. That's awesome.
Like, they got to, I think, 3,000 students and 50 million in venture funding, all based off like this huge Airtable base. And they obviously then started building things when they needed to, but I don't think even for them, it wasn't a conscious, let's build this with no code. It was just, what can we use that's already out there, that's off the shelf, that will do the things that we're trying to do? And I think this is something that sometimes people overthink things in the no-code space, where just because you can connect five things together to do this job, is there just not one thing that does it already really well? So I'm guilty of it as well, where I built the MakerPad job board with Webflow, Zapier, Airtable, Stripe, and all these things, just to have it in one place and just to be like, okay, I spent time building this thing. But then I was like, well, what, was there any real need in that? Can I just pay a service, $100 a month, and have it completely sorted and everything works perfectly? It's not like a slightly annoying way to do something like I've built. So we just went with software that does that for us. So
yeah,
there's lots of like, just because you can, you don't need to do no code for no code's sake. It's just like, you got to weigh up those pros and cons too.
There's the thing, right? Of not, don't reinvent the wheel. And it's so easy to almost want something customized, right? I feel like there's this push that everyone wants to have something that's slightly tweaked for their needs. And if anything, that's what has made tools like Notion take off in popularity so much, is that everyone doesn't want to be shoehorned into the same project management or note-taking workflow. They want something that's customized for their needs. And you can go off the deep end there and build your own new app or build something with no code. Or maybe the better solution often is take what's on the shelf and then use other software to patch in with no code connectors or whatever to sort of add the functionality you need, but try to reinvent as little as possible.
Yeah, and that's why I think you learn that over time, where, okay, I've built so many things that I know that it's quicker and easier often to just use a piece of software that is $100 a month than actually just building this whole system that you've made, and you've made it complicated and it relies on a bunch of different things. The more things that it touches, the more things that could potentially break it, essentially. So I think, thinking through that and things as simple as possible all the time.
What are your favorite no-code tools today? If you were going to just, you were mentioned if you're starting a new idea and you would go spin up a Zapier account, what generally, obviously I know it would depend on what you're trying to build, but what are the tools you feel like are the ones most people should know about when you're thinking of building something new without code?
Yeah, I think you can basically build anything with Webflow, Airtable, Zapier. And then if you need a membership, a piece to that, you can get around it with a bunch of different things and having a Stripe account or things like that. But I think Webflow, Airtable, and Zapier are the three like key pillars of the no-code space that I've been using over and over again. But something like Card, which is CARRD, is like the easiest way to set up a website, or one of the easiest ways. It's just so quick to do something. There's Super, which, if you, like I said earlier about Notion, if you have a Notion page, you connect Super, and then it's got like the web page is generated from your Notion page. So it's just really, really simple and looks great. Glide is another one, which is just so quick and easy to, I think it helps that some of these tools, for them to be educating more and more people about no code and automations, they need to get people to that aha moment as soon as possible. So I think something like Glide or Stacker, they do that so well, where it's, okay, I'm used to hanging out in my spreadsheets. All I do is connect this other thing. Oh, wait, I've got an app. Like, that was really easy.
Yeah.
That was really quick. I've got this thing now, which is completely a different realm to the spreadsheet I was working in. I think that really, really matters.
And so many business workflows are already run with spreadsheets. There was a old, I believe I saw it on Hacker News, maybe a tweet, that mentioned that basically if you want to find a new SaaS startup idea, to hang around businesses and see what they're using spreadsheets for, and that you can find essentially new business software that needs built. And if people can take those existing spreadsheets, turn them into more or less an in-house app with something like Glide, that would be a great aha moment to be like, wait, we can do way more than we thought we could.
Yeah, exactly. And we've invested in a company called Causal, which helps you do a bunch of stuff that spreadsheets make it harder for you to do. So if you're a real spreadsheet whiz, then like you could probably do something similar. But it's Causal basically allows you to do financial planning, build financial models, and like have visual dashboards like really, really simply. So you can see that, or you probably recognize that people in the financial world could build something as complex as this. Maybe not make it look beautiful, but it's still like still something. Whereas for me, if I'm doing any financial projections, I'm going to be spending more time trying to figure out how to do them in a spreadsheet than, like I said, you just go for something that will do that for you. But yeah, Causal is a great example of what can people do in a spreadsheet that is really complicated, and how do we make that really, really simple?
How do you spell that?
Causal.app.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What do you think has, pretty much we've seen tools like, obviously Zapier went from very basic one-to-one kind of connections to having multiple steps to flows. You have things like Airtable that went from just a really basic database to then having forms that can bring in data on their own, and these in-app widgets that let you build so much in one place. And of course, Webflow is crazy for just being able to let you, it's like it's front page, but done well. It's wild that was an idea almost discarded from the 90s of building a website without code. And then here they actually did it well. What do you think is next for no-code? What tools, I guess, are on your radar, or features you hope no-code platforms bring in the near future that
yeah,
push
I think
things
the,
forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact for no-code to have is in the workplace. So they're not going to be the sexy tools necessarily, but I think anything that helps companies or knowledge workers, people in these roles, become like workflow builders, anything that helps big companies do that at scale, I think is going to be huge. And I think that we're going to need to have tools and things like that that really penetrate the workforce in order for this whole no-code thing to spread. I don't know that it will spread in its current form, which is no-code. I think it's more looking at the automation space and just like, everyone understands the word automation and what that means. It's not like a specific tech term. So I think maybe that will have more of a mass appeal. Maybe it'll be just a bigger thing. So if you went to someone at a company and said, what job do you do in the telemarketing? You say, well, do you know there's probably X many automations that would make you run 10 times more growth experiments per quarter or whatever it was? You could easily justify those things and put some numbers there that would help people understand the benefits and be willing to try it. So I think lots of stuff in that space, and yeah, we're investing in companies that are doing that, and yeah, I think that's going to be huge.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, ties in what you'd mentioned before with spreadsheet-style workflows that companies are already using, and being able to take those to the next level without requiring development effort. What do you think, and I guess this is, you've touched on this a certain amount with what you've built with MakerPad and such. What's the craziest thing you've seen someone build in the community? When I was at Zapier, I had interviewed people who had built Zaps to do crazy stuff. And one guy had built essentially an Uber for lawn care using Zaps. And I believe they were using Gravity Forms and WordPress and Twilio and probably Stripe and a few other things to essentially let people on demand book lawn care. And almost struck me as being, you know, this thing that you would have never expected someone to have built on their own and without having to code more than they did. And then yet they did. And what do you think is the craziest thing you've seen or most exciting thing you've seen people build in the community?
Well, my most recent exciting story is that there's someone who was a member of MakerPad from the early days called Tessa, and she, I could sort of see her going through her learning process, and she had a job and she was trying a bunch of side projects in the fitness industry. Not many of them were sticking. So you're just learning more and more about these no-code tools and diving into our workshops and just like trying, really immersing yourself into the community and trying everything. And then recently she sort of found something that clicked, and it was helping gyms with automation. So like creating an automated service for gyms, but it was actually, it feels like a product and it works like a product for the gyms themselves. They connect things really easily like you would any software. And she's now got funding from Earnest Capital, who are investors in MakerPad also, and now is doing this full time. So she's gone from like that whole part of what I did before for MakerPad. She's also now done that by coming through MakerPad and learning no code and exploring that way, and now has funding and is doing this full time. So that's my favorite example recently, for sure.
That's incredible. And that's a difficult industry over the past year with COVID restrictions and such. Yeah.
I think it really helped with, this service will help you like with your payments and with your like chasing people up for anything like gym memberships and things like that, I think.
It reminds me of the general idea that to a certain degree, the past year has pulled trends forward, where remote work and a lot of the trends that people who are already working in tech maybe were seeing, that they have now gone mainstream much faster because we were sort of pushed into it with COVID. And to a certain degree, that's likely been a thing with automation tools as well, where more people are trying to do more on their own, do more in less time, and that pushes them to seek out ways to do that. And this is how you do it. It's things like no-code tools in general, Zapier and such, that can let you do more in less time on your own, get more out of your business.
Yeah, I think this whole creator economy, I think there's just like a convergence of a few different industries that are all actually pushing towards the same types of goals. So having funding models like Earnest Capital and companies like Pipe and others like that, that are saying you don't, like not every company has to be like an Uber, has to be a billion-dollar company. You can have a different type of company. You can run companies differently now, and there's other options to have access to capital that way. This whole creator economy, Substack, Gumroad type industry where you can make money as a full-time creator. You can have a bunch of fans write to them every week, and you can make a living that way. And then there's no-code, which is your team of one could feel like a team of five quite easily. You can have automations working for you and everything in that way. So having a bunch of these things together means that there's just such a bigger pool of people creating and having their own individual businesses or individual products and services that feel like and run like companies that may not have survived sort of 5-10 years ago if these things weren't around then.
Absolutely. And even in the software world, when you're actually coding software, everything from AWS to Twilio to the entire API ecosystem has enabled the exact same thing in the software realm, where companies can now do much more than they would have been expected to do in the past with much fewer resources.
Yeah, exactly.
Ben, I'm wondering, what do you think is the biggest, I guess the hardest thing that people tend to have when they start building automations and they're wanting to do more and start learning? I guess where do most people get hung up there? And they think maybe they've started using some amounts of automation, but they're not quite sure what to get, where to go further. I guess, where do you tend to see people getting stuck there in that flow?
Yeah, I think some people that get stuck even before that and think, well, what can I automate? And
yeah,
I think there needs to be some sort of framework to help people go through the process of, oh, wait, I'll copy this data and paste it this, like in this place when something happens. Is there a way to look at it in terms of automating that? Is there something that you have to do that's just tedious and sort of low value that you do all day, like every day or every week. So when we've spoken to some companies, that's what the first thing is. Oh, I don't think we've got that many things that we could automate, but we would like a product that would do this type of thing, and we would like something that would do this type of thing. And they don't necessarily see it as, oh, I can use no-code tools or a few different types of tools together to do this thing, which I think is part of like the current branding of no-code, where lots of people are stuck on the, okay, it allows people to be entrepreneurs and have membership sites themselves or a marketplace or things like that, where actually, like I said before, the biggest impact is going to be in the business world and having that mentality or thinking, what could I build? Like, what can I do? How can I make this better? How can I make this more efficient? That's almost something that companies have to adopt, or it has to be like a value of the company, where shipping things and experimenting is part of the culture. So I wonder what we could do broadly to help enable that a bit more. But I think the rising entrepreneurship wave and all of that will also make that sort of more prominent in the workspace too.
No, it made me think of, weirdly, almost the dropship economy and how that general idea gave almost a bad name and a bad feeling, or if not a bad feeling, at least it shoeboxed what people thought of ordering products from a supplier and selling them to customers, where that's a standard business model for so many companies, where you're not necessarily manufacturing your widget, you're getting a factory that specializes in that to do that, and you're doing the marketing or whatever. And that in many ways, that's the way a lot of product companies are run nowadays, is they're the design and they more or less outsource everything in the whole flow. But to a certain degree, some of the terms around that, where they're outsourcing or drop shipping, ended up almost building that into a thing where I feel like creators almost would think they need to build everything from scratch just to be accepted. And to a certain degree, it's stepping back and saying, no, that's not the branding there, or that's not all this is. There's a bigger thing here.
Yeah, and I think that's a danger. And that's the thing that I get worried about with no code is, we don't want it to stay in this small niche of like the startup tech world on Twitter. It's in danger of then becoming that drop shipping type atmosphere, which is not the point.
Yeah.
It's making a conscious effort now to know that, okay, we've got to show and speak to people and show people that this is a different type of thing. This is an infrastructure change in software development, not just like a sort of phase or a fad of building and being an entrepreneur and making a load of money. It's not like, that's not what this is about. It's, you can just do more with less. Like, how do you just make that message the bigger message here?
So it's no code. It's do more with less. Or just do it. I guess we could rebrand as Nike.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they'll be fine with that. They're fine with sharing things like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're cool. Ben, thank you so much. This has been great chatting with you about, no code, and building a community and everything else that you've been working on. For the people listening today, what's the best way to follow you? Is Twitter, at Ben Tossel, or MakerPad?
Yeah, at MakerPad, at Ben Tossel on Twitter, both of those work. And we're MakerPad.co for the community and all the education. We've got so much free stuff there too, so you can just dive in with free content and then decide if you want to go deeper, basically. So that's how it's currently set up.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed hearing your perspective and appreciate you taking the time. And for everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back soon. Bye.
Cheers, bye.